Hello and welcome. I'm Sam Harris, and it is my true honour and pleasure to host you here on the Growth Mindset podcast. I talk to amazing individuals about how they achieve their dreams and break down the strategies it takes to lead explosive tech businesses to being paid to travel the world. I deep dive into topics such as Bitcoin and fintech, or just how to get stuff done, with the goal of increasing our own collective wisdom and making us all happier, healthier, and wealthier. Who doesn't want that? Today I have such a cool podcast for you. My guest is Felix Chandler, and at the time I'd literally just met him on a beach in Thailand where I'd been working on building a business for automating a lot of business stuff using AI. And I found out that he ran a business as well, and he was writing homework for students, which has some questionable ethics behind it. And I really wanted to get into that a bit more. And I've shared a few workouts with him and just had some fun telling stories and life tips before. So I figured he's just a really interesting guy and would be worth talking to. I really did not expect to learn as much as I did from him in this podcast. And I spent a lot of it just being slightly mind blown. And it was just a really, really great interview where we go deep on some of the best tips and strategies for finding happiness and satisfaction in your life and how to optimize the business and work side of things just to get to where you want to be in life. So I do apologize that the microphone that I used to record my own voice was pretty crap, and I basically cut myself out of most of the interview where possible. And Felix sounds great though, so that's the main important thing. And then just as a word of warning, we do take a few minutes to get into the interview to warm up and stuff, and the word Thailand comes up maybe too often in the start few minutes, but it does provide a lot of useful context to the rest of the conversation, so I've left it in. And without further ado, this is me and Felix. Can you introduce yourself quickly, please?
Yes, I'm Felix from Australia, and I'm 28, and we're on an island in South Thailand at the moment.
Cool. So what brought you to Thailand?
Well, when I was 8 years old, my grandfather picked me up from school and said, if you could go anywhere in the world, where would you go? And I'd done a project on the Great Wall of China. And so we went there, and that sort of started my travel bug. And then when I was 18, in Australia, there's a tradition of doing schoolies where everybody gets blind drunk for a week when you finish high school. And I decided instead, after having been to Thailand with my grandfather, that we ought to go to Thailand instead and party. And so I'd fallen in love with this island when I was 18. And for the first time, danced and took mushrooms and explored a number of other things. And so when I was at university studying finance, which was quite boring, I sort of dreamt of balancing this dream of exploring and particular being in Thailand. Halfway through my boring degree, I was checking the university emails at nighttime, scrolling through the hundreds that you'd never read. And just one caught my eye that was titled Travel the World, Study the World. Oh, I clicked on that, and you can study in over 30 countries. And my heart almost jumped. Oh, if they have Thailand, would be exciting. And I clicked through, and of course, there it was. And initially, most countries, you couldn't exchange there for university, or it wouldn't work for various reasons. They didn't teach in English. And when I looked into it further, Thailand was a very good option for my course. And the next minute, I had a grant and was off to Thailand to balance the dream.
Cool. And then since then you've come back quite often.
Yeah, I sort of fell in love with the country and culture in ways, and learnt the language fluently. And I did 1 year exchange, and then I kept this balance going by doing an ASEC, a student volunteer organization internship in a big company in Bangkok. And my relationship with Thailand sort of changed a lot on the surface. As they say, it's all smiles. That's all very pleasant. And of course, spending months in an accounting department of a big company, you get to see other sides of the boredom and mundane life that's not that exciting as well. But yeah, I still love it. And I've got a deeper relationship with Thailand. And yeah, the weather, to the food, to the people, it's like a second home.
Cool. What would you say you... The food is your favourite thing, or all of those?
It's hard to say a favourite. Having preferences is so transient. Depends what you're focusing on and where you are. But I like the simple things in life, really. And I like the warm weather. I like the food. I like general friendly people. And it's easy to get around and it's safe. Yeah, the simple things.
But can't you get all of those things in Australia?
Now, well, the weather's different. That depends on your preference for cold weather or hot weather. It depends what type of people you like to hang out with. And no, there's not that street food culture, if we look at one example being the food. And there's not that sort of many aspects of Buddhist culture, which I do like here.
Okay, so you went through your background about university and stuff. How did you get into business?
So after the undergrad, I tried to keep this balance going and did internships and didn't want to commit to any offices. And I kept that going by doing a master's and then considered a number of other jobs. And when I'd finished my master's, I was in the gym one day with a friend. And at the time, I'd been working in a cafe for peanuts where they treated everyone like dirt. And I was very bored. I ended up getting just been fired from that job. And at the time, I was quite down about it. And they explained, well, you didn't keep the toilet roll on the toilet. And that was your responsibility. I couldn't maintain the most basic things in the most basic job. And at the time, I'd convinced myself it was because I wasn't capable. Which, in retrospect, it seems a bit ridiculous that I was not capable of keeping the toilet roll on the toilet. Now I'd say it's more a matter of whether it was stimulating enough. And I think, sort of naturally, my mind was more used to thinking of more complex things, and it just bored me. And so, yeah, I was at the gym with a friend. I'd been working this job, and he was on the phone to another friend that didn't want to do his homework for university. So the friend on the phone had the genius idea, well, Felix has finished his master's, and he doesn't have a job. Why doesn't he do your homework? Oh, wonderful idea. So I went over to the other friend's house, had a look at his essay on political philosophy, which looked fascinating. And he had a nap on the couch for a few hours. And by the time he woke up, I'd almost finished. It was so interesting. And the really odd thing was, in contrast to doing your own homework, where you'd dick around for hours and be on Facebook and procrastinate, when it was someone else's for money, not only did I enjoy it, I did it really efficiently. I was concentrating, sitting up with a straight back the whole time, and his project was done, and he paid me $300, and he got a high distinction, and it was pretty win-win, and I really enjoyed it. And then I thought, well, we should get more of them. So then I started advertising on the internet, and that was going okay. It was sort of much better than the cafe job, but then I'd got projects in areas that were either too boring or I couldn't do, such as OH&S was too boring, and IT, I didn't have a clue. So another friend in IT had the simple solution, of course, freelancer.com. And next minute, I was outsourcing all the papers, unless they were particularly interesting and I wanted to write an essay about something. And I'd been reading 4-Hour Workweek at the time. And a lot of people, I think, read that book and say, well, that's not applicable to my life because I have to be in this physical job or I can't utilize any of these ideas. And I couldn't, obviously, outsource changing the toilet paper roll and in the cafe at the time, so it wasn't applicable as much as I liked a lot of ideas in the book. But I think a lot of the ideas got me in the mindset of efficiency and 80-20 and considering my time per hour. And so when I initially thought of outsourcing these projects, I'd only keep half the money. And I thought, oh, we'll lose half the money, it's not worth it. But with a new perspective, sort of reevaluating that, it figured that when I outsourced it, I'd end up sometimes spending 5 minutes on net on the project for forwarding an email, in contrast to spending 5 hours writing the project for another 50%. So just a change of perspective made me consider the per hour pay being much, much better. And so obviously it made sense. And once I'd freed up some time, the next step was, of course, to focus on you could do more advertising or get more clients or get better freelancers. And so I've kept doing that job on the side for about 6-7 years, half of which I've spent traveling the world. It's generally, back to the 4-Hour Workweek, it brings up his philosophy. He states at the beginning that, look around you, 99% of people don't enjoy their job. So instead of trying to find your dream job, let's minimize work and get back on the beach. And I largely agreed at the time, but I've fluctuated in my opinion as to whether I want to totally embrace that or, to a degree, find some jobs in some routine part-time that do give more satisfaction than forwarding emails around the world and never looking in anyone's eyes or doing anything real or tangible for anyone. And yeah, so there's sort of two philosophies there. I don't want to work 50 hours a week, but I don't know if I want to just forward emails forever and create nothing. You know, there is some value in doing some real tangible things for other people.
Yeah. Okay. Quite a lot of questions from that. So firstly, did you then turn it into more of an official business, like with inbound leads? Or is it just, you just have like adverts and people email you and
A couple of adverts on online classifieds, receive some emails and then forward them to Kenya and Pakistan.
Oh, wow. So there isn't like a website where people go, I have this problem, I'm going to tick this box. I want to get
So I did build, I got a website built at one point, and there were lots of different avenues I could take it in, and that seemed more professional or like an area of growth, but it wasn't very pragmatic. And once I thought about it, if you Google it right now, there's hundreds or probably thousands of companies doing, or sites doing, this big business of doing your homework. It's huge. And so you obviously have to compete with them all. Now, who wants to do all that SEO and compete with 10,000 other sites? So instead, finding a sort of niche, I just found the simple way, which was doing online classifieds where people were searching for it, and then found some unique ways of catering or attracting customers that other services weren't doing. And so in that way, it was much more effective than competing in some typical way with other competitors.
At its peak, how many kind of customers would you take on like a day?
It's probably only doing max regularly like 3 projects a week. I probably at some peak, I remember I made like only $800 a week in about 8 hours net for the week or less. Yeah.
Cool. And so you're doing less of that now?
I've sort of stopped tentatively. There's always two sides of you. Part of you, yeah. It's sort of when you were 22 years old, traveling around the world, sitting on the beach, ordering avocado shakes and spending 1 hour a week working. It was amazing, and it's sort of hard to let go of that in a way, making $100 an hour. But as I discussed before, I've got to a point where I'm really happy living minimally. I don't consume much, and you know, I already come from a lucky, well-off country and have a good passport, and yeah, maybe it's better to just be satisfied with doing the simple other more enjoyable part-time work I do at home. Yeah, and appreciating it more.
Do you think you're partly influenced by people telling you that you're doing an unethical business?
To some degree, there'll always be an influence of how other people judge you. I'm relatively carefree about other people, broader society's opinions, having travelled around the world. And to some degree, a lot of people tell me, that's wonderful, you're so smart, blah, blah, blah. And that also maybe influences me. But I think it's almost more, I'll almost say, biological or inherent, that we are satisfied or fulfilled by dealing more intimately with people, doing something that people actually feel gratitude for. If I do a massage treatment or teach yoga, you know, at the end, someone looks you in the eyes and says thank you and really values your time. In contrast, when I've had freelancers for a whole year at a time doing all my work and sending all this money and relying on each other every day, and you only have one sentence emails back and forth saying confirmed yes, reply no, you know, send the money, received. It's so impersonal, and in a way it's not satisfying. Also, of course, on a utilitarian perspective, I'm not creating anything tangible for anyone. To a degree, though, I will say there's been times where someone sends you an email and says, thank you so much for freeing up my time. I didn't have to write that terrible project. I got a distinction. Thank you so much.
And I guess that's kind of rewarding. Did you ever make any relationships with people that you felt you were really benefiting, like they deserve to do well? Or
no, I never knew that much about it. It was so impersonal and so quick. But one interesting, there's so many different moral perspectives on doing this, but for me, from a utilitarian perspective, it's very much about the impact someone would have as a result of not doing their homework. And for me, that very much depends on which discipline they're studying. And for me, if they're doing, say, marketing or finance, I couldn't really care if they're not as capable of selling Kit Kats to dogs. However, if it's nursing or sustainability/philosophy, in recent years, I tell people I won't do their homework, because their disciplines are important and actually serve a purpose. And one funny story was, someone wanted me to write their sustainability project about corporate sustainability, which I had done my master's in. And I'd come up with a compromise. I said, look, I'll get the paper written for you, but to substitute your learning, you have to watch the documentary The Corporation, and you have to write me your perspective and a summary. He agreed, and then he sent me the summary, and I just thought, I'll just check in case he's cheating. And what do you know, he'd stolen the summary online. I said, no, you can't have your project yet. You're going to have to do it properly and actually watch it. And he whinged and whinged, but he did it.
Probably gave him as much work, sorting the whole thing out.
Or maybe it's a, I thought maybe it's a better form of learning, you know. You can just go through an essay, cut and paste, and not really think about it. Maybe in ways a documentary can reach people more effectively.
Yeah, definitely. And people do learn in different ways. If he, like, takes home, like, three things from that video, that might be better than, like, just copy-pasting mindless facts he's not engaged with for his essay. Okay, cool. So how was it? So you said managing remote workers was just, like, really transactional emails. Was it, like, difficult at all keeping hold of all the different people, or did you have to...
Once I got pretty comfortable with... I was really poor with attention to detail when I started.
Yeah, wondering, like...
And so, of course, if I'd gone into some structure or business where someone else had taught me their efficient ways of doing things, it would have been a lot quicker to get to a point where you're efficient. But it taught me a broader skill, I think, which was problem solving really in a personal level. And there was all sorts of little hurdles, some of them very intangible, such as when I started, my unique service was that I offered all the work up front. So someone sends you two emails and they want a $300 project, I'd never ask for any money up front. And this was a sort of just a broad perspective or open-minded way of marketing. And when I initially started, you were all worried about making a deal. Maybe I'll send you half and then you'll send me half the money and then we'll promise each other. And if I'd carried on like that, I mean, you can spend 2 minutes doing the emails, or maybe, you know, an hour because you have to spend 20 emails. And then you can spend your nights worrying about, is that person going to pay you? And you absolutely don't know them. You just have an email address. And having read 4-Hour Workweek, I did a calculation and realized, well, I should give it a go, trusting everyone. And, you know, if 10% didn't come through, you know, but you've saved 80% of your time of sending extra emails and distrusting people. Instead, you tell everyone at the start, I trust you. You know, here it is. And mind you, I often didn't know which university they go to. I didn't know their name. I didn't have any recourse. And I figured even if you lost 10% of them, you're ahead because you've only spent 20% of the time. And the rest of the time, we could work out another business idea or whatever. Yeah. And it's really, I found that underlying idea really works of considering how much time you spend on each thing and where the benefit is, 80-20.
It's a really good example.
Yeah. And so what I found, the interesting sort of social psychological experiment, over the 7 years of doing it, zero people have simply avoided paying because they could easily get away with it. Zero people. Now, these aren't our sample size, you know, average sample of your population. These are, of course, the cheaters. But it goes to show that if you have an agreement with someone, even if it's two lines on email and you've never looked each other in the eyes, most people just honored it.
That's amazing.
It is.
But did you like pre-qualify them as in, like, were your adverts saying £300 so everyone that got there was already ready to spend the money?
I kept the price really simple, again, so you don't spend endless emails arguing about the price. And I kept it a round figure, which I think in your head makes you not argue. If it said $105 per 1,000 words, then everyone's going to try and round down. But it was $100 per 1,000 words, no arguing. And even without having to say, let's not argue or anything, just having that round figure really prevented people from asking for discounts. Easy to calculate.
But as in, they already knew what the price was before they emailed you.
I usually put it on the advert. Again, because you don't want to get any emails that you have to process, that they're going to end up liking your price.
Yeah, yeah. That saves you time from the initial debate and also saying...
Totally. It's those little things, those little details that if you think about it and spend enough time, you can just improve efficiency like that, I think.
Yeah. Did you try a lot of different ad campaigns over the 7 years to optimize?
No. And, you know, like starting so many businesses, there's initial setup time and frustrations and just trying things, right?
Yeah.
And I got fairly lucky in the beginning in that one of the local online classifieds had a good market for it. Now, technically, there's online classifieds all over the world. And if I was to search in all these different countries, there's the same service. Now, if I wanted to work out how to sort the VPN and you could just get a list of the richest countries and offer the same service on their local classifieds, and you could do it anywhere, and you could have 4 ads at a time if you can beat the site that's trying to block you from doing it. You could have 1,000 ads, you know, auto refreshing. But back to what I was saying, I didn't want to spend more of that initial startup time in working out those sites and those technical difficulties because I hate doing those things. I really hate it. So they were trickling along and I just kept a few ads on that site. And partly because I'm not that fascinated by it. You know, it was a laugh. It was fun, but I'm not that inspired to push this further. And just when I sort of decided to stop, I realized where the big market was. I realized a new, awesome way to market it and get huge clients. But I sort of just lost interest. And someone made me reflect on what motivates us like that. He said, all the businessmen that work out awesome businesses have fire under their ass. They lie asleep at night trying to work it out. You don't just, you know, then that's what it is. If you lie at sleep at night trying to figure shit out, little details, and think of these little things, you can figure out a lot of stuff. But where does the fire come from? And I reflected and realized, for me at the time, I had fire under my ass because I'd finished my master's and I was going for these job interviews. And I knew I was depressed as fuck about the prospect of working in a big corporation 9 to 5. And I couldn't sleep at night thinking about it. Or that shitty cafe job that I had. And so when, you know, I had a little taste of earning way more money in my pajamas at home, I would lie awake at night thinking, you know, with excitement about working it out. But otherwise, you know, working out how to make ads or work out these menial things for menial ends is just not enjoyable. You have to have some fire under your ass. Yeah. And I don't really have it anymore.
Do you think that was partly due to age or partly due to, like, to take it to the next level of being a much bigger thing, you'd feel uncomfortable being like a millionaire that made it through sort of slightly unethical things that you have to explain to people?
No, I like having the interesting conversations and challenging people's morality and seeing their reactions. I'd be perfectly happy with that. And so, side story that's relevant, I was employing this Eastern European woman who was studying medicine to write my papers for me regularly, you know, while she was studying. Her boyfriend, who was working at IBM, who claims he didn't do any work all day at the office, he started doing my IT projects and, of course, figured out then that he should be the one outsourcing. And he has since gone very, very big time with it. Last time I spoke to him, he said he had 150 projects that week. But I didn't believe him, and he just sent me a screenshot of his Excel spreadsheet where you list all your details of your projects. And he had 150 projects that week, and he had managers, sub-managers in India managing other teams of writers. And when I do the calculation on that, he was making crack dealer wages and saying, you know, we're just going to do this for a couple of years and buy a bunch of houses. And I sort of figured, I'm already in this. I know how to do it. I know his model. I could sort of do it. And that's just when I was finishing, and I could sort of do it, but I just don't have the fire under my ass.
So you're saying your fire is now more towards just doing jobs you kind of enjoy part-time and then being a bit of a nomad, or just searching still for a new fire?
It's not much of a fire. Not having fire under your ass is pretty nice. I'm very, like, sustainably satisfied with doing yoga and running chess clubs and doing massage if it's part-time enough. I guess if I was looking at doing massage 50 hours a week, there would be fire under my ass again. And I'd be back on homework and thinking about every other thing. And given that I've spent years vagabonding around the world and having, in many ways, unprecedented freedom, I think I could never forget it. And that always feel that fire under my ass. I wouldn't be able to sleep at night thinking about how to get the freedom back. But in many ways, I've sort of also gained the freedom in more long-term, non-reliant ways. Whether, you know, in many ways, just not consuming things, not spending much money in so many little ways. I like being very minimalist. So in that way, it's also harder to feel the fire under my ass. When I just finished the Masters, I was very much questioning, how much money would I need in the future? What do I need to be happy? And I know now I'll never have a real phase of wanting a nice car or wanting to show off nice things to get attractive women or anything of the sort, which often drives a lot of other people. So in that way, I'm more content.
Back to the 4-hour work week. Sounds like you're also influenced by, like, you know, the story of, like, the fisherman. That's quite a good one.
Yeah, that is relevant. That is totally relevant, yeah.
Can you summarize it for me?
Yeah, you know, the American businessman goes down to Mexico, sees the fishermen on the coast. They're fishing, sitting around enjoying his evening, and he says, you know, if you just saved, borrowed some money, invested in another ship and in another ship, and then got a huge fishing ship, you'd only have to work hard for 40 years. And then what do you know? After work every day, you've just managed your stuff. You could sit on the beach fishing. Yeah, very. And he's there sitting fishing, and he just looks at him, you know, like, I'm already doing that. And that's particularly on this beach, on this island where we are now. I've met a number of people who have gone through that process. A lot of people who have been drawn into big corporations and made a ton of money. I had a few friends here made tons of money, got sucked right in. And in reflection, pretty consistently, when I ask their opinion, how were the people in that workplace, in the investment bank, in the law firm, whatever, were they happy? Were they all depressed and fucked up? And the answer's pretty consistent that I tend to get. And yeah, in the end, after a long process, I just find a lot of these people come back to the situation of the fishermen sitting on the shore. You know, they're questioning, what do they want? They got just satisfied and disillusioned with Rolex watches and shit. and come back to some more fundamental forms of seeking happiness, which I think he does really well in 4-Hour Work Week. He sucks people in the beginning talking about how you're going to make $10 million. And by the end, he slowly forces people to philosophize and think about what really makes you happy.
Yeah, I kind of relate to that quite a bit because before I started uni, I worked on yachts sailing around the Caribbean and was like surrounded by all these millionaires and things, but just being paid to have a really nice time and chill out. And it's like, well, I can work endlessly for like 40 years to be one of these millionaires with my own yacht, or I can just be on the yacht anyway from the start and be doing the same thing. And just put it in perspective of only working hard on things you actually enjoy working hard on rather than just to make money, I think important. So have you ever had any other business ideas you've been going along?
Sure, there's many. Again, for so many, because I don't feel fire under my ass now, I realise that I just wouldn't want to do the admin time.
Yeah, so definitely a factor every time.
So I don't think about too many anymore that would require much setting up online tech headaches. And instead, I've recently become more inclined towards some less techie automated things that are more down to earth. And I guess one big question hanging over me at the moment, I've been doing managing a small company at home for the boss, which now, having been inspired by me, wants to travel around the world many months of the year. So the business is running chess clubs with kids at primary schools. And it really doesn't feel like work. I mean, I ride my bike with no shirt down to these schools and play chess with kids and try and inspire them that they don't need computer games. Instead, they can enjoy chess around the world and develop their mind in different ways. And there's a little bit of admin and bookkeeping, but again, if you're 80-20, it's not that bad. And anyway, there's the prospect of taking over that business, and I really enjoy it. And the dichotomy for me is that if I do it, I could be doing the same thing for 10-20 years. It'd be very repetitive. You do have to show some of the kids how to move their chess pieces again and again. You do have to do the same accounting a little bit again and again. But it's not many hours per week. It's pretty great, and maybe it's as great as it gets. And I half want to accept it. The other side of me just loves being able to take off and go to the other side of the world and sit in the mountains whenever the fudge I want. There's that, and there's yoga and building yoga clubs with kids at schools. And if you do them well, they make good money for your time, and I could have someone else sitting there and still go around the world. So they're pretty good options. They're pretty tempting. But I'm more interested in them now than I met one guy just moving things from Alibaba to eBay and working really well. And I thought, I could figure that out. And I started doing it. I could translate that Chinese page and I could start working that out. Didn't want to.
Yeah, it's a bit of a headache. But I think if you enjoy the flexibility of the lifestyle, then fulfilled by Amazon or...
And I guess at the moment I am lucky. I have enough flexibility that, you know, I can work the whatever it is, a term or at yoga schools for a while at home, and then I can take off for a number of months. I don't have to stay all year. So I've got that flexibility, and I can, you know, go home to cheap rent anytime, and I'm not consuming much. But if I didn't have that, and I guess as a result had some fire under my ass, I would have spent a bunch of time trying to crack Alibaba to eBay. I would have, yeah.
I don't really know that much about any of the specifics of what you've done, apart from that you've done lots of traveling. But I do remember you saying something about you're in Hong Kong during the
Umbrella Revolution, was called. That was one of many awesome travel experiences. I was at the end of a 3-month visa in Japan, and one day before I was leaving, deciding where to go next. And I just read an Economist article saying that the vibe in the Umbrella Revolution protests was Woodstock-like. I looked down at my guitar in my tent, and it seemed like an obvious option. So I got the plane to Hong Kong and got the bus straight into the protests, where the central financial district had been closed down, and there was a Woodstock vibe with endless sprawl of tents and music and yoga classes in the street and art all over the ground and walls. And I'll never forget it. It would sometimes bring tears to my eyes just to see the school kids and all of society so inspired in the center of steroided up capitalism, where everything is privatized, to see people take the communal space and create, as they called, guerrilla gardens and just commune in the street. And it was so well organized. It was functioning anarchy like I've never seen. The toilets were perfect, and everyone had a study area for all the students that would come down, skip school to come down, and old ladies would cart around teas and snacks they'd brought from home. And so we were under one of the central government buildings in this sea of tents, and we had the Wi-Fi from the government building, and I was staying there for a few weeks, and at the same time outsourcing some projects and spending about $0, having the most amazing experience.
Have you got any other, like, really memorable experiences from traveling?
You know, there's way too many to even remember. And sometimes when my mind's really active, you're reminiscing, you delve into it, then I realize the extent to which I usually can't remember them all. It's so overwhelming. That's so many. And sometimes it's also overwhelming trying to empathize or understand someone's life or mindset when I just pass through customs or something and there's someone who's been stamping a piece of paper for 20 years. And if I empathize at all, I have to recognize the huge discrepancy of how lucky I am to have had this broad, open-minded experiences and options. And sometimes I almost have to distance myself because it's overwhelming to just pass by that person and not want to empower them or share with them. Another just little trip I'd done well on a trip that's probably just not as exciting but more relevant to people to consider. I think for so many people that may not be happy doing their stamping a piece of paper for 20 years, is teaching English abroad. It's such a good experience and so much more easy to do than everyone realizes. And it doesn't have to be forever, but when I was living in South America for a year, I did a stint teaching English in Colombia. That just took anyone, and you'd be sent to these big corporations and do one-on-one lessons with no experience. They just wanted to talk some English, have some conversation practice. And it was such a great way that you can integrate into a culture. And in some places like Vietnam, it's easy to get paid $25, $30 an hour to be in some little town and teach some basic English. And again, maybe you'd get bored of it after a while. Maybe for some people it's not analytical enough. But so many people, if you're not happy... I just met some investment banker last night here on the island saying how he can only sleep 4 hours a night and his body's fucked and he's depressed. And this is like... Well, it's a no-brainer. You know, you have to sort those things out first. If you're a happy investment banker, like, awesome. But until then, I just reckon that person should go to Vietnam and have a chill adventure.
Yeah, I always kind of thought when I used to get depressed when I was younger, like, that I'd never commit suicide just because I'd be like, well, I could just go to Africa or something and work in an orphanage and I'm pretty sure my life would be fine. Like,
yeah, and really going through those plan Cs and really accepting the worst possible scenario and accepting it, that really changes your outlook so much in so many ways.
Do you have any other big life lessons besides the 80-20 rule and having a plan C of kind of stoic mindset?
Part of a stoic mindset, enjoying the simple things, enjoying a simple routine. And I had that question when I'd finished my master's and I was questioning what would I want in the future, what would make me happy. And I was wondering, it was such a mystery. And I was having dinner with my dad at the time and talking about it. And his simple answer was, this is it. And like, it still sort of rings true that, you know, healthy food is healthy food. And if you go for a run, it will release endorphins. And I'd go and play chess with the old men in the park all the time. A lot of them are 70, 75. And they still enjoy the same simple activity every day. And it's really satisfying. And that is it. Playing chess in the park for free forever is about as good as it gets. And to know that I'll be able to enjoy that when I'm 75, in contrast to the confusion I felt having finished masters and wondering what things would make me happy, is really satisfying. And I think to meditate and focus on and maximize the enjoyment of such simple things, really sustainable way to be happy.
Yeah, I think it took me a while to learn that when I was younger, of kind of similar to the fisherman story of like the future in front of you, you're always kind of seeking something more when actually you're wasting the time that you have right now, because this is the only life you have. You spend the next 5-20 years working for something in the future, like, you've missed the 5-20 years where you can be doing fun stuff. Especially, I think Tim Ferriss makes a point of like, whilst you're young is the time when you can go skiing and doing adventurous stuff. Like, if you build everything just until you retire, you can't really do much with that retirement anyway.
Totally. And that relates to being able to accept a plan C, you know, because if you have nothing to fear, then...
Okay, cool. And any other really good books that you've read? Because I'm guessing as a nomad...
Well, I've had a lot of time to read a lot of books. The one you've probably heard about that's really popular and so is probably a good recommendation to a broad audience is Sapiens, Yuval Harari. It spans human history until now. Talks about all sorts of aspects of evolution of society, beliefs, religion, what brings us together, what makes us happy. And it's just such an amazing effort to weave together such a broad tapestry of concepts. Mind-blowing.
Yeah, I really like to sort of step backwards, look at just humans as a race and what they're doing. And
as well, I love reading history because it makes you appreciate how unique the circumstances are and how amazing it is to have these freedoms beyond just working a boring 9-to-5, but also in a historical context, not being whipped as a slave all day or not being sent off to meaningless wars. I feel so privileged.
Have you going on to the second book, so I'm still halfway through.
Second Sapiens. One's awesome too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay, I can look forward to that. Good news. Anything you want to ask me?
How do you deal with or justify doing the admin and technical headache things that you do? Because when I hang out with you and your co-founders, it's almost in a way inspires me that I could be trying to make more of a change or build more things. But the trade-off is, of course, I don't want to learn coding on a computer. I don't want to look at a screen all day and I don't want to have those headaches. And how do you deal with it? Is it worth it?
Yeah. Well, the coding side of things, I quite enjoy. It's like a bigger version of doing Sudoku or something. It's actually really quite therapeutic. And, you know, like you get flow if you go really into something. So it's actually quite nice if you're just on a pure like algorithm for a day or two, like working out something really complicated that you can't just think of instantly and coming up with novel ways of doing stuff. The DevOps side, which is the admin, boring, making one thing work with another thing, is just a really boring headache and everyone hates it. And that is quite frustrating. But I guess I did sort of say I do very much relate to the just living in the here and now, doing like an easier life versus trying to build a business to be a millionaire. But for this business, I think it's just really cool what we're trying to achieve and the potential to be able to make businesses like online really quickly and automate away all the headache stuff that we don't like is really good. So I was thinking I might ask you, like, okay, would you start a business if you could just have your website and your accounting and your legal stuff and everything sort of sorted out? Because basically everything we do, we automate it as we do it, so we'll never be doing it again. So it's kind of all right to be doing boring admin if I only have to do it once, kind of thing.
And what about if you were just employed as a coder, then you could just do algorithms, you wouldn't have to do any of—
Yeah, I wouldn't mind doing that for a bit, like a year, maybe 2 years. Yeah, just not very comfortable with being employed by other people in the long-term situation, I think, unless I'm really feeling like I'm adding a lot of value to the world or something, just because I like the flexibility to do what it is that I want to do. So I can take the holidays when I want to take them, and I can change what it is the business is doing and work on like what's more interesting to me when I'm leading it, rather than dealing with other people's decisions, which you might not even agree on, and just have more control of what it is you're doing. It's like, I don't mind doing shit hard work if I'm giving it to myself. Like in the same way, like if I make a mistake on something, that's fine. It's my fault. I'll learn from that mistake. If someone makes a mistake and I deal with their problem, it's annoying if I constantly have to deal with their problems, like, I guess. And I do feel like it would be worth having many more hours worth of conversation with you in terms of, there's definitely so much interesting stuff in your head. Yeah, it's really enlightening in general. And I think really useful for anyone to think about. And I'll write like a whole wrap up in notes and things. Do you want to share your Twitter or Facebook?
Email is the good, efficient means of communication that doesn't involve too many distractions.
Okay, cool. So if you want any advice, your email is
felixkchandler@gmail.com.
Cool. I'll put that in the show notes if you want spelling and things. All right. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Awesome.
And good luck with the ferry to Bangkok.
Thank you.
My pleasure. So that was Felix Chandler. That just goes to show you really can meet some very interesting people just by saying hi when you're on the beach or wherever you are. I have now since travelled to Melbourne, where he also lives one block away from my sister, so we've spent quite a lot of time together since this interview, and I've really enjoyed doing more meditation and yoga and learning more about the ways of his life and trying to chill out a lot more of the time. It's been a really nice few weeks. We ended up attending a festival together that was basically a bunch of hippies in the forest without any technology. It goes on for a whole month. I was there only for a few weeks, but it's a really interesting experiment to do. So I will do another future podcast with him on that. But more back to the point of this interview, here are my top tips. Number one, really assess how to optimize your time and money. He showed some great examples of using the 80-20 rule to work out where he is making and losing money and time. And his example of the strategy to just not charge up front for his customers and saving himself hours of emailing with every single customer so that he could then work with a lot more customers was like really quite genius, I think, because of it's generally natural to sort of avoid trying to lose anything ever, but actually he was gaining so much more by potentially losing sort of 10-20% of his customers paying, but actually being able to deal with so many more of them at once. As it turns out, they actually all paid anyway, but it was a risk he was perfectly willing to take for the potential gains from it. Two, you need to be passionate about what you're doing to build a big business. Felix talked a lot about having a fire under his ass initially when he just hated his job and just needed something to earn him money. And so he built his business just to solve his current problems. But the actual way that he solved those problems wasn't solving a bigger problem in the world that he cared about. So once he'd solved his initial problems, he didn't really want to ever grow the business or do anything more. So if you do want to build a business that is big, you do need to have the fire under your ass once you've covered your own like initial monetary issues and really care about what it is you're trying to do. Otherwise, you'll just lose motivation and won't want to do the more difficult tasks or the tedious things. 3. You can be very content by living minimally. By needing less, you can be very happy, it turns out. If you reduce the expectations of what you need to have to be happy in your life, and you can focus on finding gratitude and other rewarding ways to live your lifestyle. You don't need to waste time working in a job that you don't like and enjoy, and you can spend more of it on the beach and reading and doing art or following other passions like learning and doing useful stuff or caring for other people that don't need to make you money, but you can really enjoy. And lastly, I just really like the point that life is now. Seeking something in the future means that when you arrive in the future, you'll probably be seeking something else in the future. You need to be content with what your actual current situation is now, otherwise you maybe never will be content, and you're missing out on the whole week, year, many years that you have in line before you get to this thing that you're seeking. So you really need to focus on just being happy with what's going on at the moment. And if you're not, just make a change sort of now, like stop waiting. And now books. We did talk a lot about the books, so I feel you probably haven't forgotten them. But just in case, we spoke about The 4-Hour Work Week, which is such a good book on a lot of the things we speak about, like how to find happiness and run a business using 80-20 and spend more of your time doing what you want and less time doing labor. And in general, Tim Ferriss is a great guy to listen to for this inspiration, but maybe his 4-Hour Body and 4-Hour Chef books are a little bit overhyped. And then the other books were Sapiens and Homo Deus, which are both really amazing reads on humans, and I think I've recommended them on the last two podcasts already, so probably don't need to go too deeply into those. If you have any follow-up questions for Felix that you really want to ask him in the next podcast that I do with him, please let me know, because I have time to put some things together. And yeah, contact him, felixkchandler@gmail.com. If you weren't aware, I've totally launched the website finally for the podcast. So you can go to growthmindsetpodcast.com to see blogs, show notes, and pictures of the people that are on the podcast or whatever you want to do and get in touch or whatever. It's just all a lot easier to find these things. And I think that is everything. So I hope you had a lovely time listening to the podcast and have learned lots about how to be happier, or have just relearned stuff that you already knew and probably weren't doing as much as you should be doing. And that this has brightened up your day, and the rest of your podcasts are also awesome. And I'll look forward to having you back next week. You've listened to an episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your preferred app and give me a good rating. If you are unable to give good feedback right now, try sharing the show with a friend who will, or just wait for the show to improve. If you have any ideas for the show or you just want to reach out, I'd love to talk to you. On Twitter, I am @SamHarrisTweets, or Instagram, SamJamSnaps. Show notes, along with links to everything that we discuss, are available at growthmindsetpodcast.com. Along with information on how to get involved and blog posts on cool things that you should be aware of. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy your next podcast.